Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTE GA podcast. Mikey Safford here. Hope you're all keeping well on this fine April afternoon. Well, it is when we're recording. We are joined today by Kieran Whelan, and glad to say, first time on the pod, we have Shane Dowling, former Limerick and the Pearcy hurler. How are we all doing, lads?
Good, Mikey.
How are you going?
I don't think any of the three, well, I don't, Rory might, but does anyone have any opinions on the burning GA issue of the day, which seems to be the Kerry GA Museum and where it will be located? A fight has broke out between Killarney and Tralee on where the Kerry GA Museum will be placed, which to me is the most Kerry thing I've ever heard. A, they're planning a museum, and secondly, they're having a fight over where it goes. So watch this space. Civil war coming in the kingdom.
I would have thought, Mikey, if the O'Shea's got hold of it, they'll have it outside Paddy's pub. It's that'd be more likely where they want it.
You know, it's a bit, never say never.
Absolutely.
It's a bit like when Sydney and Melbourne couldn't agree where the capital, which one could be the capital of Australia, and then they just built one in Canberra and made one up. So I'd say they might have to go to neutral ground, but the obvious one is, I suppose, would be Fitzgerald Stadium. That's where they all the big intercounty championship matches. But there's a long running dispute there with Kerry. Like, they try and move as many of the league games and big club matches into Austin Stack Park and Tralee as often as they can, which is a fine ground. I mean, we were down there a couple of years ago, Wilo. It's a fine ground, isn't it?
Yeah, like,
I
mean, it's
beautiful pitch. Yeah. They've done that up really well. The facilities down there are really good. But look, I mean,
I think they have some sort of agreement to play their Saturday night matches in
Tralee. Well, there's lights as well. The lights in Tralee, and there's none in Killarney. But like, the reality is, like, Killarney, I mean, geez, like, it's hard to beat it with that backdrop, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Then Shane, you obviously, like Rory, you come from a neighbouring county of Kerry, but you have the good luck where your code of strength is not the code of strength of Kerry. So you probably don't have the same relationship with your neighbours in terms of their perhaps notions about themselves that some people might perceive. That they might have perceived that in Cork. You in Limerick probably don't. You probably rub along well enough together because, you know, you don't rub off each other so much.
No, and I think if my memory serves me right, I think Limerick have only played Kerry once in a league game a number of years ago. And I think I was involved in the Pearcy at the time, so I actually wasn't even at the game, but it was down in Kerry. I actually don't even know what stadium it was in, but no, we'd rarely come across them. But even from a personal perspective, you know, I would be a Killarney man myself anytime I want to go on a trip away.
Yeah.
I treat myself to the Europe Hotel. You can't beat it. It's certainly not cheap. It's not cheap. And it's definitely not cheap nowadays. But it's a treat. It's a treat. So, yeah. And actually, even talking about Killarney, it's very sad to see the fires that went down there, especially in the National Park. Dreadful. Wasn't it? That was nearly probably a bigger story than the museum. But anyway, I think they have it under control. But now, Killarney, in fairness, Kerry as a general, as Wheeler said, they were down in Dingle. Tralee, Killarney, Kerry's a magnificent spot.
Magnificent.
Sure, wherever they do put the museum, I'm sure it'll be nice.
The interesting thing about it though, Mikey, are they the first county board to have I know there's one in Thurles, but that's a GAA museum. I mean, I don't think Dublin have a museum. I know that Cork don't. Fair play to them. You know? they never wants to miss a trip.
Well, museum is for historical stuff, you know what I mean? Yeah. Hit the cycle yet, you know what I mean?
In a more pressing matter, we probably should have discussed Shane's fee with him before we brought him on, now that we know that the Europe Hotel is his destination of choice.
But as I said, I would like to go down there once a year. But have you seen the prices down there now? Because obviously, with the hotels having to reopen, now they're gone outside my budget now as well, Mike. It's gotten too expensive.
All right.
Shane, you can see you sitting there on the lake, you know, behind the hotel there with a cocktail in your hand. Yeah.
It's
the way to live, way to live. Apart from the Kerry bun fight, I suppose the more significant news that we're awaiting, we're recording this on Thursday just afternoon. We're expecting this evening an address from the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, on the latest easing of restrictions, and all political correspondents seem to be well briefed that among the easings will be barbers for you, Rory, which is key, and also that a non-contact training for adults in pods of 15. She'll be back on the 10th of May. And then the 7th of June, the return of competitive matches in non-elite sports, which is obviously would include club GA. So we know that's obviously good news. But then immediately, those of a competitive mind will be thinking, right, the 10th of May to the 7th of June is less than a month. And where do we fit in challenge matches? Where does contact training come into that? We're probably not looking at leagues starting anywhere on the 7th of June if there's no challenge matches and there's no, and maybe only a week or two of contact training.
Yeah, unlikely, Mike. Yeah. And listen, I think the great thing is, isn't it a great week? There's great news. There's positivity. You know, we finally have a roadmap. You know, you're looking even further down the line and you're thinking of possibilities. Is there possibilities of crowds and inter-county games? Who knows, you know, but like it was a brilliant week this week. Even to get the kids back, you know, from Monday night, just to see the juveniles, particularly down in our own club, down, you know, the kids, 3-4-year-olds, right up to minors, the balls around the place, the energy. And I think one of the interesting things, something you probably discussed on the first podcast was, but a lot of talk around, you know, would the same numbers, would kids come back? And I know at the start, and there's probably further challenges ahead come into winter. But certainly in the short term, the numbers that we saw this week were fantastic. And I think a lot of the kids are so bored with doing whatever they've been doing the last few months. Xboxes are hanging around. They've had nothing to do. And I always felt, I got a sense in the last 5-6 weeks that there was going to be an energy and numbers will hold up. And we had brilliant numbers this week, which is brilliant to see. We also actually had a surprise visit by Larry McCarthy on Monday night, first night back. Larry is obviously home, living in Ireland. I think he's based in Malahide, and he just jumped in the car and drove to Sylvester's and drove to Fingallion's and drove to Pat's Adana Bay and just randomly appeared at training sessions, which was brilliant to see. And I think, you know, he mentioned it's a philosophy that he wants to carry, that he's just going to go to random matches and turn up at clubs, you know, unexpected and stuff like that. So I thought it was a nice thing to see from his perspective. You know, obviously the challenges are everybody's back and getting back in and they're in their pods and all that sort of stuff. But I do think that date of the 7th of June, you know, if we get away from the kids stuff, you know, you're kind of saying, well, the adults will only get back and matches will be allowed on the 7th of June. You know, adult players, minor players, all groups have been off a fair bit. They're only getting back into it. We have to be conscious of injury prevention and all the challenges that go with that. So I would anticipate that most counties, that obviously it's up to everybody individually to look at their master fixture program, and particularly dual counties with hurling and football, which you would anticipate they'll give clubs a few weeks to arrange challenge games, non-competitive games, get guys back up to speed, and probably see the club season kicking off in earnest probably the end of June, I would have thought. But listen, it's great. Great energy.
Can we go back to Larry McCarthy there for a second? Did he have any kind of an entourage with him, or was he on his own? Because my fear for him would be, you know, it was kind of a low-key presidency. He took over, like, Congress was done on a Zoom call. You know, he hasn't done that many interviews. He hasn't been out in the media that much. My fear would be he'd turn up and introduce himself and people would be like, Larry who?
I think that did happen, you know, didn't it?
Well, I think that's what may have happened. You know, I wasn't down there at the time. We had finished training. We were out 6:30, 7:00. And, Larry, I would know Larry from New York days. I would have played with Sligo, you know, going out to New York, and he was heavily involved over there, and he played a bit with Rahini when he was based in Dublin, going back a good few years. But I think, yeah, Larry, he just arrived on his own and went out and wanted to take a photograph of the group of kids, you know what I mean? So, I suppose he's only getting back into the role. He's been in New York and low-profile appointment, all right. But I think there's something nice about that. I think there's something ordinary about it, that, you know, there's no airs and graces, and the president can just randomly turn up and go in. And he has that sort of interest, you know, and I think he will... He's the type of guy who will just randomly appear at matches and he'll stand on a bank. And if nobody knows him, he won't care. But that's just the nature of the guy that he is, I think. You know?
That's nice. That's nice to hear. Shane, obviously, Na Piarsaigh, hugely successful club, kind of, and a success that, like with any successful club, is very much built on underage structures. You know, your generation that came through was kind of almost the first very successful in the Pearcy generation. So you obviously put a lot of stock in underage. So as Wheelo said, you would be a bit concerned, I suppose, if you didn't think the numbers were coming back in what they were pre-pandemic times. How has it been from what you've heard in the last couple
of years? Yeah, so I haven't been down there, I suppose, being honest. You know, the underage kids went back Monday night, so there was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm not over any underage team this year in the club, so I suppose what they did ask for is that there'd be no casual people walking down or pucking around there because it was going to be busy enough as it was. So, you know, you have to respect that. But from speaking to different lads and a couple of the boys that are involved in the teams, it was... the buzz down was supposed to be just unbelievable, like, you know, and because we've got, you know, we're lucky, we've got great facilities, we've got three pitches, and you can see the pitches from roadside and also from the estate that it's in. Like, you'd be driving past them over there, or driving, you know, past the pitches in previous months and seeing them so empty, the grass getting long, the pitches not lined coming into March. It was tough to see, but over the last couple of weeks, a lot of work has been done on the pitches, getting them back up to speed. And then I did drive past there the other night just to have a look in, and the car park full and bodies everywhere. It was great. And as you said there, Mikey, like that, you know, over the last number of years, the last 10, 15 years, we have, you know, done a huge amount of work in the underage in the Pearcy, and that's where our success has come from, and we haven't forgot that. So there's a lot of us trying to, you know, give back the time and to ensure that the generation that are coming up are competing and trying to get a couple of new players every year. So it's very, very important for us. It's great to see the numbers. The numbers haven't dropped. If anything, I think they're going to increase, because as Wheelo said there, kids were getting so bored. They just want a bit of activity and run around the place. And thankfully for them, you know, that was back this week.
Yeah. A big administrative hurdle they're going to have to jump, Mikey, though, is obviously scheduling. Given the fact that June 7th now is when official fixtures will begin, that could possibly be challenge matches only, and I'm sure county boards will be scrambling now to try and arrange a reasonably coherent fixtures program to see out the year. But they've committed to running the provincial club championships and the All Ireland club championships as well. Now, you factor that in, and particularly in dual counties, again, I'm speaking by and large, like, it's not really an issue for, we'll say, some of the counties that play football only or hurling only. Like, that to me is going to be a massive challenge. Like, can you fit in, a full championship program that's going to feed into a provincial club system and run a league competition at the same time? You know, I think that's going to be very, very challenging.
And you have counties who have to finish out 2020.
Very challenging for, and lest we forget, very challenging for amateur board officers as well, who are doing this probably while holding down a 9-to-5 at the same time, you know?
I think it's something, though, that they can develop a solution to, if I'm being honest. You know, obviously, the club championships, as we know, are on hold till the inter-county championship is over, and they're going to be given their dedicated time in September and October, and then you've your provincial championships. But, you know, between now and then, if you're looking at dual counties and
run leagues,
they run leagues. You know, if they just split the leagues and you have two groups instead of, you know, so if it means having four or five league games instead of 10 or seven or eight instead of 15 or whatever the setup is within each individual counties, and the leagues are run on a, you know, similar to the national leagues to a certain degree, where they're split into two fours. So you're half in your games, you've lost 3 or 4 months, maybe. You do have midweek options as well, in terms of maybe having more midweek matches under, you know, because the light is available. I think most county boards will be innovative and have some sort of solution where they can give clubs some sort of a league. And even if it's not taken too serious, or there's no relegation or promotion in the league or whatever it is, get them games. Just get games. And I think that reflects right down through the juvenile sections as well. Everybody wants to have their failure or their championship and wants to have that competitive edge when that time arises, but have some sort of bespoke competition tweak it or change it to at least give guys a few games and give them a lead in, because club players, they're going to need games. With all due respect, they're getting back training, they're waiting for the counties to finish the end of August, they're going to have July and August, two full months.
they're not going to Spain or America.
Like they deserve games. So yeah. I think most county boards will come up with some innovative solutions.
How would that go? As we've spoke about Dublin a few times, Shane, like the league, especially in football, is almost as important as a championship for a lot of clubs. How is the league treated in Limerick? And would do you think there'd be buy-in for something like that, where if you split them into East and West or North and South, you'd have a shorter league programme, but at least guarantee games for club players?
I think we'll hit the nail on the head. I don't think players would particularly care what structure the league goes into, where they end up or who they end up playing. I just think they'll want game time, and they'll want to be, rather than having the headache of trying to get challenge matches and ringing, being allowed to, like, will they be allowed outside counties and travel very to true, outside yeah. counties? And I know they're talking about inter-county travel, but will you be allowed to actually play challenge games, you know, within different counties? Because last year that wasn't the case for a large period of time. So to answer your question, the leagues here in Limerick, no is the answer. They're not taken overly serious, right? I suppose I can only speak from the Pearson's perspective. You know, we've maybe seven on the inter-county panel. We've always had in around the same number over the last couple of years. So we'd have always been without them. And I suppose it's a great, it was a great competition to get players game time. And if you had some players that were playing intermediate or junior and they wanted to try to stick their hand up, that's what it was used for. You know, I think there's, I don't know what the case is in Dublin or other counties, but I think there was some sort of a prize at the end of it where you get a €3,000 voucher for O'Neill's gear or something. So you got some sort of clothing out of it. So when you got to the latter end of the stages, you certainly wanted to win it. But whatever about previous years, this year it'll be about getting game time into the legs, you know, getting enough games. And the thing about it here as well is that there's no point in getting game time. And I think we'll see the same with the league, with the inter-county teams, with the league. You're not going to have the same players playing game on game, because you're going to have to give enough game time to all the players that are involved to ensure that injuries aren't going to happen. So I definitely think, you know, as Wheeler said, leagues have to be thought about from the county boards. They have to be implemented, but it'll only be a case of, you know, getting game time so that when championship does come around the end of July or August or whenever it may be, that players can go at it full throttle and not be worried about lack of game time or injuries. Yeah.
With that in mind, Shane, how are the, I guess you're still in contact, obviously, with the lads in the Limerick panel. How are they approaching the first few weeks of training? Is it are they doing just fitness, or was that already dealt with? Are they doing all ball work now? They're obviously not trying to peak for 2 weeks' time. They're looking to peak for the height of summer. So without giving away, obviously, any state secrets, how are they approaching the first few weeks?
Well, I know that week one it was certainly all about just getting bodies back onto the field, tipping away, getting back used to everything, and not by any stretch of the imagination would you call them all out sessions or tough sessions. And I think any counties or clubs that do that will only end up seeing one thing, and I think we all know what that is. So you know, week one was definitely about just getting back into the swing of things. But I don't, like, they would have been doing, I'd say Limerick were doing a lot less than most counties were, and I think that's where John Kiley, to be fair, is very, very good, is that there's a trust among the players that, you know, he knows that they're going through the way and that they're going through their own gym work, going through their own bit of running, and they weren't tied down to doing five sessions a week since February, you know. So it was really only, I suppose, maybe a month before they knew that in the county teams were going to come back, that, you know, I won't say a bit of pressure was applied, but things were being stepped up a small bit and more structure was put to their training week. So by the time they got back in, they were in relatively good shape. But I mean, at the end of the day, when you're going for training on your own or training with one other person, you know, running around the field or whatever it was, to going back in trying to do hard, you know, game-based drills, there's no comparison. So they're going to have to incrementally build that up. And I think that's what they're doing. And I know, you know, they're now, this week even, it would probably be as tough a week as they've had. But then next week, you know, they're getting ready to face Tipperary. But I don't think usually what would happen is, coming up to games, you taper your training week and you the load will come down. But I don't think the load is going to come down this year, because they can't afford to have it come down because they haven't got enough time. So I definitely think that sessions right up to championship will be as intense. Whereas in previous years, we'll say the night before championship mightn't have been as bad, you know, bad ways in terms of how hard it is. But this year round, I think it's just going to go straight through the championship.
The Dubs are in good shape, Mikey. They had their pre-season done, so.
Rudely interrupted.
You're running that down in Limerick, anyway.
Who's this liner for the Leinster Championship?
I was wondering if you were going to get in with a preemptive strike or let me make a joke, but good man, you got there first. But
Guido, did Andy come out of that, by the way? What? So obviously there was a number of high profile players with CAD, and I don't know whether it hit the papers or not, but was there fines handed down or players pulled in? Because there's a couple of rumors going around, and believe you me, I've come across plenty of rumors that weren't true. So I just want to know, is there any news up there on that?
Like, Desi was suspended for 12 weeks and lost home advantage for the league, isn't that right? That's it. That's about the size of it.
There was talk, the players were interviewed, but to be honest, I don't know. I haven't been talking to any of them, but listen, as he said, I think somebody said when we reflect on this, I don't know what it was Pat Spillane said a couple of weeks ago, when we reflect on this in 20 years' time, and it's a few lads kicking a ball around the field.
And there was someone hiding in a bush at 6:30 taking photographs of him. I mean, it's...
What I'd love to know is who the leak was. There was obviously a leak, because there was no way a professional photographer was hiding in a bush at 6:30.
I'd say there's been a few guys commissioned with investigating. I'd say that work was ongoing. If I was to
ask. That's the investigation.
Who was the snitch?
apart from clandestine training, obviously during the spring, Wheelo, I think what Shane is spelling out there is that perhaps we shouldn't expect too much in terms of the first couple of rounds of the football and hurling leagues, in terms of the amount of training that lads are going to be doing in the week before the matches, the lack of challenge matches, and the fact that everything is this league. Whoever wins it's going to be very happy to win it, but it's probably not their end goal for the year. So particularly the first couple of rounds of the championship, we could see some slow and ponderous matches. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, like the league is going to be an interesting dynamic. You know, it is going to be used for championship preparation. You know, if you're a young lad getting a chance, obviously it's going to be a massive game for you. You're getting a chance to nail your colours to the mast. But you got to think that the bigger teams that have championship ambitions, you know, are looking further ahead and will be training probably through the league program and using it to experiment and get the game time into as many players as possible. You know, particularly, I suppose, the Upper Division 1, and it's an awful pity there's four Northern teams. It's like a mini Ulster championship up there, isn't it? And then they have a tough road ahead of them, because there is...
What state are they going to be in by the time they get to the end of their league campaign?
It's regrettable that there is an imbalance up there, because the Ulster championship, as we know, it's a lot tougher for them. And then on the flip side of that, you look at the Leinster Championship, and you're kind of saying, you know, there's still teams that are trying to progress, and their league status is usually important. And you could have some teams, managers that still, like, they're thinking, yeah, going into the Leinster Championship, if I'm lucky enough, I might get lucky enough to be hammered by the Dubs at some point, if I get to that point. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Or they're trying to win, you know, obviously the likes of Offaly and Louth has an interesting dimension to it. You have John Mann and Mickey Hart. Yeah, there's going to be some good games. But you just wonder, with the teams that are in Division 3 and Division 4, and thinking ahead to the split competitions, the Tailteann Cup and stuff like that, the league is going to be quite important for them. So I think definitely at the top end, I think you're going to see a lot of shadow boxing. You know, it would probably be a little bit farcical maybe at times. And you could see, I think the way managers will approach it, they might approach one or two of the games, you know, where they're looking to maybe get a performance, put their best lads out, but they'll definitely experiment in some of the other games. So you won't be able to read too much into the league at all. Obviously, teams that are under new managers, you might get a sense of the style of play, or how they're going to change, or how they're going to set up for the championship. But anybody that has championship ambitions, I think I won't be paying too much attention to it in terms of what it's going to do for them come championship, you know.
There is promotion and relegation, though. The one thing I would say, Wheelo, is in football, I think the leagues in football will certainly be a lot better again than the leagues in hurling. I think the leagues in hurling will, by and large, be another phony war. I mean, Cork, as I said that a couple of weeks ago, Cork are playing Limerick on the 5th of June, and they're meeting each other in the Munster semi-final. Is it 3 weeks later? I'm not too sure they're going to be showing their full hand in that match. You know, they'll be definitely playing their cards close to their chest in that league game. But in football, like, the really, really interesting weekend in a football context is semi-finals weekend, because the semi-finals in the league is where the teams promoted will be decided, and the teams, there's relegation finals that weekend as well. So there'll be a lot on the line in those games. That's particularly true. Those semi-finals will be massive, massive. Like, the reality is, some of the finals may not get played depending on scheduling, because if there's teams involved in the finals that are out in championship the following week, they're just going to declare joint winners.
Below Division 1, no one cares about the final anyway.
But you won't want to get relegated out of Division One at the same time. Mm, yeah. So that'll still be quite a big game. And like, if you look at, we'll say, Division Two, which is always the very interesting division in a lot of ways. Now, it's maybe a little bit more skewed this year because Cork are in it and Cork are dreadful, right? But, and they're not, I was only joking. But you have some very interesting teams in that. Like, I mean, Mayo are in Division Two, and Mayo are always a story, and they will want to get back up to Division One. You obviously have Kildare and Jack O'Connor, obviously, in the other group. So you have Mayo, Meath, Westmeath, and I can't remember the last team in that particular section, which will make things reasonably interesting. So if you do have ambitions of getting promoted, you're going to have to hit the ground running, is the point I'm trying to make.
Just one thing I'm unsure of, are they able to play challenge games at the moment, lads?
Well, it's intercounty travel disbarred at the minute.
They're elite teams.
I haven't heard of any challenge matches, but I said I haven't been asking either, so I'm not sure. Shane, did anybody play any challenge matches?
No, they haven't played any challenge matches. I'd imagine this, it's only, 10, 11 days to the first round of the league. They haven't been training anyway, so. And anyway, I think it'd be stupid to have that to play in challenge matches now, because they're not ready to play a challenge match. I'd even argue, will they be ready to play league matches?
That depends. Depends on the amount of training they've done.
Ring the Herald.
Well, I can only speak from Limerick's perspective, and I know that Limerick abided by the rules, and they are only, as I said, they're only going back training in a number of weeks, and they're playing a league. So I think they'll need every day. I think they'll need to push on and be ready for the league.
Monaghan and Dublin are playing a 3-match series, I think. All right, lads. Well, look, we'll do a full league preview next week. Well, for the hurling at least. So we'll leave that there. I just wanted at the back of last week, we had a bit of news with Noel Healy and Colin McKinney, two Dublin stalwarts, hanging up their boots for the last time. And Colin McKinney will say for the last time, he's done it previously. But it just got us thinking about GA retirements, particularly at Intercounty, where it's become a news story in itself, where perhaps previously it wasn't. And we kind of decided to talk about this before we decided on our guests, and you're both quite interested. And I said to you beforehand, Shane, if we're bringing up bad memories here, blame Rory, because I said let's talk about retirement. He said, I'll go get Shane Jowling on, why not? So it's Rory's fault. And
I think you played with Conal, I'd say, did you, Wheelo?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure, he played. Yeah. Even back Ireland, sure, he was football predominantly for a couple of
years. That's right. You would have been, though, I would have thought, Ciarán, among the first, not the first retirement obviously to be news, but there was a lead up to your retirement in that back in 2009, obviously you weren't starting games as far as I remember. And then obviously the season came to a very abrupt end against Kerry, 124-107. And a lot of the Dublin reaction after the game was about you and whether or not you were going to retire. And you did in the end, you did an interview with the Herald, which is, I think, obviously the only way for a Dublin footballer to retire. And, you know, you ended the speculation. So I was curious.
Your column deal, Mikey, that's what it was about.
Huh?
Stealing your column deal, that's what it was about.
Well, I didn't want to say, but yes, and happily ensconced ever since. No, you did. So you did obviously do it in a way that made sense for you, shall we say. But I was wondering, to what extent were you kind of pushed into that decision by all the speculation about your future? Did that bother you at all, that people were asking so much about whether you're going to keep playing?
I was pretty clear, Mikey, unfortunately, unlike Shane, I chose to get out when I got out, and I kind of knew in 2009 I was heading for the gate. It's funny, I heard Keith Higgins talking recently, you know, about retiring and the reasons why he retired, and it mirrored my thoughts at the time. You know, you're in training, you weren't performing that well. You're performing the odd night, you were getting to the level that you'd expect of yourself. You lost a bit of pace, you know, you weren't getting to the ball as quick. Young lads were getting away from you. You were getting frustrated. And you just got a sense, you know, I was 33 years of age at the time, I got a sense that this is getting away from you. You always feel that you can do it because you've been there for so long, and that's always imprinted in your headspace that you can do a job. But, you know, then I was obviously on the bench and Pat Gilroy was talking about converting me as a full forward, and I was playing on the Killer Bees in training as a full forward. with Mossy Quinn and Dean Rock, ironically, in the two corners. But that was the B team full forward line at the time. But I also was in this situation where second child was on the way. I'd managed for 3-4 years with the first child. And I remember that first year when it's a significant change. And I know you spoke about last week in terms of, you know, your commitment. All of a sudden you have a child in the house, and my eldest lad, Jamie, was like Sky News. He woke up on the hour, every hour, you know, first year. And it was hard going, but he got through that. But I knew, you know, the arrival of a second child, which my daughter was born the Thursday before that Kerry match. I just knew it just wasn't manageable. The levels of commitment that was required. Pat Gilroy had come in. You know, we had gone probably from a traditional Tuesday, Thursday, you know, small bit of gym work weekend to 4 nights a week. And it was getting away from me, the game as well. So a combination of both those things, I was lucky that I was able to choose to get out. It's a tough time, though. And I think that's what players don't. And I think it's common to a lot of players, you know, when you step outside that bubble and it's been part of your life for 13, 14 years and you've lived it, you've slept it, you've ate it, to step outside that bubble is a very tough, tough mental challenge. I have to say, really tough mental challenge. It's underestimated, I think, and it's probably something that players don't talk about enough. Like I even, you know, watching Dublin in 2010, 11, 12, the first 3-4 years was very, very difficult, you know what I mean? And you tend to come out of retirement and you say yes to everything. You know, before I knew it, I was managing the senior club team, I was managing the development squad in Dublin, I was managing the kids team, working in the media. You know, you fed you all this time and then you go, geez, what am I after doing? I'm taking on all this stuff down. I don't have a minute, but
filling a void.
Yeah, it's a tough space. It really is a really tough mental space to deal with, and it takes you a while to really adapt to retirement. Like I even had a conversation, I ruptured my hamstring in 2010 playing a club game, but I was silly enough to have a conversation with Pat Gilroy in 2011 about returning. And like there I was sitting there thinking I would have been slower, I would have been, you know, I was 2 years out, I had a ruptured hamstring, and I had all the knowledge I had in 2009. Sure, it wasn't hope, but you still felt, yeah, I can do something. There was still that buzz of thinking, Jesus, I could be back in that dressing room door.
And what was he looking for, Wilo? Sort of a, like, did he make it clear like this was a 10 to 15, 20 minute sort of a cameo towards the back end of games? Yeah.
The impact sub, it was the 10, 15 minute man coming in and the game is, you know, in the balance, or people or everybody else is outspent on their feet. you might get an advantage on somebody. You know what I mean?
Would it be a good year to come back in hindsight?
It would have been. Yeah, it would have been. Yeah. Instead of sitting beside Pat Phelan work over the Sunday game, it would have been quite pleasant being out there.
Shane, you obviously, your experience is very different, and I appreciate you've talked about this quite a lot, so we won't ask you to go through the decision making again, because you know, you did detail, and it's a credit to you that you made this decision, and then you obviously made the conscious decision that I'm going to tell everybody about this because I don't want to spend the rest of my life talking about it. And here you are in a podcast less than a year later talking about it. But I wanted to maybe push it on a bit. And as Wilo said, 3-4 years watching Dublin was a bit odd. How did you find watching Limerick winning All-Ireland last year and not even be able to be there for most of the games, which is obviously tougher again? Or is it easier not being there?
Yeah, no, and as you said there, I suppose the reason I outlined it in detail is literally as you said, and I know you're sagging there, but it's just that it was kind of put to bed, and I didn't want to, like, you know, I didn't want to just do something, and next thing it's ongoing for a while. And even as it turned out, the problem with me is that I retired at a time when there was literally nothing else going on in the world. Like it was in the depths of this bloody thing. So
did that help,
Shane? You were a godsend.
No, it was the opposite, Rory.
Really?
Yeah, it was the opposite. Yeah, I had great gratitude and had a lot of gratitude for a lot of people, and I wanted to express that genuinely. But because there was nothing else going on, in my opinion, it just, listen, I went down too far, and there was definitely people looking saying, Jay, left, never go here, they're going to be scrolling down, all I'm seeing is his bloody thing. And I didn't like that because I felt there was too much made about it personally, but I understand that there was very, very quiet times and there was literally nothing else happening. So that's just the way it was. And I suppose the character that I am as well, I'm all in or I'm all out. And if I can't be all in, then I got to get out. And I knew I couldn't be in with Limerick. and I knew what a long road me, so I just gotta go. Hanging on there, my mind there was going to be no use to anybody, so I just had to get out. That's just my character. So then to follow on from that, I got to go to some games. I didn't get to go to other games, but I was fortunate enough to get to the Ireland final. I kind of felt like a bit of a fraud driving up the road. I was saying, here am I going to the Ireland final when you've all the families, players and wives and girlfriends and everything else at home. But I suppose, what do you do? Like, the way I looked at it was that if I could have given my ticket to somebody, a family member of one of the players, I'd have done it in a heartbeat, but I knew I couldn't do that. So I said, well, then I may as well take it up and go to the game. So I was lucky to be able to be there. I met the boys afterwards on the same day. So I was staying around Dublin for a while anyway. And I got to meet the boys afterwards, and I was absolutely thrilled for them. There's a very, very close bond in that group. I can't express that enough. And I suppose my character is that I'm a bubbly enough type person, and we'd had a lot of crack, I suppose, over the last number of years, and especially the fact that we're successful. Like, the fact that we were successful mean we got to go on a number of journeys, a number of trips, and sure, we'd unbelievable crack. Like, Gene, it was just mighty stuff. And to have to step away really, really quickly, I suppose, was very hard for me. And I'm upsetting or gladly for the boys, I don't know which, depending on how you speak that. But it was very, very difficult. And it was, as I said, like, the hurling is one thing, right? We all missed the football and I missed the hurling. But the part for me I missed was the crack and the buzz. And it was meeting up with the lads. And I remember there last winter, like, I only live about 30 seconds from the Gaelic grounds in Limerick. I can see the floodlights from my house. And I remember driving past. I remember one evening I was driving home from work, and I saw the Limerick kid fan was in front of me, and that turned right going into the Gaelic grounds, and jeez, I drove straight on going home. And I was looking in, and you see the cars, and like, the best part of Limerick training was from 6:15 to 7:00. Training was on at 7:00, but you'd be there on 6:15, and the tunes would be going 90, and everything was great. So that's what I missed the most. But I consider myself lucky to be able to be in Croke Park for the final. I was thrilled for some of my best friends. Obviously, I wanted to still be part of it, but, you know, I'm a Limerick man, and that's first of all. I was a Limerick man before I was a Limerick hurler, and a Limerick man will always want Limerick to do well. And the fact that I know all the boys so well, and I was in there, sure, it was just amazing to see them win. So yeah, listen, it was difficult, still is. I wasn't too glad to hear Wheeler saying it takes 3 or 4 years, but that's just the journey that I'm facing. So listen, it is what it is now, and I was very fortunate to be there and win what I won, and that's it.
Yeah, you can see why people go on, Rory, can't you? You can see why Conal Keeney played on into his late 30s, because, you know, it's a hobby and it's a pastime, and as well, you know, but it's very all consuming, and you know, you actually deal with a lot of players who are coming out of retirement, because they're the ones you're interested in as pundits, and you've probably got an interest and insight into watching games with lads like Wheelo on the sideline, watching Dublin player, watching Shane during last year's All-Ireland final. It's a transition that, I suppose, it's hard to have sympathy because you're inter-county players and you've lived your dream, yada yada, but at the same time, it's a wrench.
Oh, I'd say it's very, very tough. I mean, look, none of us could ever even begin to understand what it would probably feel like. I mean, the dream of playing intercounty GAA, intercounty football, intercounty hurling, to actually achieve it, firstly, no matter what county you're from, it's incredible. And then to go, as Shane and Wheeler both mentioned, on the journey through your whole career, highs and lows. It's funny, actually, like, an awful lot of the intercounty players that you speak to when they first come out, you ask them, you know, like, what were the kind of big stand-up moments? A lot of them, and Shane just mentioned it again there, like, it tends to be the trips away. It tends to be, you know, like, you know, maybe a weekend in New York, or maybe when they went to, you know, Lanzarote as a group, or maybe, you know, like, a lot of them actually, they wouldn't necessarily reference a particular final, a particular match, a big sort of sporting element to it. It's usually the fun things that they've done as a group together. And I, like, to a large extent, I suppose the only thing that you could equate that to is like being in a family. You've kind of, you know, and then you're, I suppose, to all intents and purposes, I mean, lads, you tell me, you're effectively evicted from that family, are you? You
know? Yeah, well, like, it is your family, because essentially you're in that group, and everybody's working together and bought into a process. You put into that privately, you know, and you hear that regularly, and so it does become your family for that period, and you're so engrossed in it, And it can have huge negative sides to it as well, because you can become too engrossed in it. Like I heard Fento talking there over the Christmas, and I thought he summed it up when he spoke about he's able to park intercounty. He's very good at being able to park intercounty and leave it to one side and focus on the other things in life. I found that very harder. You know what I mean? I was totally engrossed, and you lived and you edited and everything revolved around it. But it is your family, Rory. You're dead right in terms of it's that hour before training, or it's the half an hour after training, after a tough session. It's the slagging, it's the banter. You know, probably back in our day as well, there was, you know, you were committed to the whole process, but you enjoyed the few points after the match, the Monday club, the bit of band, all those memories, the playing golf together, you know, all that. It becomes your family for that period of time. And players come and go, and there's players there that have more longevity in terms of their careers, and you develop great friendships around it. But it's very hard, because you're just literally, one day you're in that bubble or in that circle, and the next day you're out.
Because I wouldn't necessarily say, Wilo, that you're scrap heaped, because I don't necessarily think that's the way the GA would look at it anyway.
And look, but you are.
But we'll say, I suppose,
like Harvey Norman, Rory, when you're gone, you're gone.
but I do think, you know, it must be very difficult to have this running tap, and just one day just somebody turns it off and that's it. Now, I suppose, you know, people might argue, look, at least with GAA, you may have the crutch of falling back in at club level. But like, I think you spoke before, Wilo, that you found that quite difficult, because when you went back to your club, most of the guys that you were playing with had all moved on or had stopped playing. And when you went back, it was lads you didn't even know, by and large, because they were all a bunch of young lads that had come up through and had formed the Raheny club side while you were off playing with Dublin. So you didn't necessarily have that to fall back on. And I think if you compare it to other sports, particularly professional sports, I think, look, ultimately, when the professional tap gets turned off, at least by and large, you probably might have something to show for it. I think that can be difficult for GAA lads as well, because a big part of the remuneration to a certain extent is the focus, the spotlight, the adulation, the fact that you're playing high profile intercounty sport. There is no financial incentives here. And then one day it just stops. And yeah. Well, what do I do now? You know, it must be tough.
I'd say that the club is a huge outlet for guys when they're retired. You see loads of guys that go back and they will play, and they play for another 5 or 6 years and then settle back into the club. Obviously, that decision was taken out of my hands when I ruptured my hamstring, and then I ended up managing them instead. You know what I mean? But it's at least that's something, that's some sort of continuity. If you continue to complain, you can have that competitive edge and you can integrate back in your club and you can still play and see it. And I think that's probably what a lot of guys do. So they're still... they still get that drug, if you want to call it, that they still have that dressing room banter. They still have the competitive edge. They're still able to do something. Like Conal Keeney's like Conal Keeney, lads, is probably the ultimate competitor. Like he'd fight you over two flies going up a wall. Like, you know, yeah. He was that type on a golf course. You know, he'd always be willing, usually competitive, wants to win. Never surprised me that he hung. He got every bit of ounce out of himself. Yeah. Say possibly, and it never surprised me that he went to 38. Like
38 is incredible.
It's incredible, and I think it's going to be a long time, Shane, since we see someone go to that age again. You know,
it'll be a long, long time before you see someone at that age.
Tony Brown days,
I think they're gone anyway. But even just to go back a step, and I don't know if you saw Shane McGrath's article there maybe a week or two ago, where he was saying about, he said that intercounty's gone too serious and it's not fun anymore. Did anyone see that? I don't know if you saw, but anyway. So he basically just said like that, you know, that it wasn't fun anymore, it's too serious, this, that, and the other thing. And I would totally disagree with that, because I remember back about maybe 6-7 years ago, you know, it was definitely gone to the stage where it wasn't. So we were getting up early mornings. If you were training at 6 o'clock, or if you heard that the neighboring county was training at 6 o'clock, you needed to get up at 5:30. And it went down. And then you were like, you know, it was the train, everything became so serious. But in fairness, and I can only speak from Limerick's perspective here, in the last couple of years, and that's what it was even harder for me, is that if I had to retire maybe 6 or 7 years ago, you know, since I got out of that, I think he's gone mad altogether. But in the last couple of years, and again, I can only speak from Limerick's sake, is that it's actually gone. It's very enjoyable. It's very structured. You do your three pitch sessions, you get your gym sessions in, you know, definitely once a week as a group, and maybe option the other or whatever the case may be. But it's very structured, and every you get plenty of time off. There's loads of rest periods. So I think it's actually gone a full circle again, if that makes sense.
But John does. John always struck me though, Shane. John Riley always struck me as the kind of fella that would place a big emphasis on the fun part of it too, though. Would that be fair?
Absolutely. And I remember the first year John came in, we had a meeting in we had a group meeting, and it was a hairy meeting. No, it was a hairy meeting. There was a lot of questions asked of a lot of people. And I think the meeting was supposed to go left, and it went so far right, you wouldn't even believe it. It was just one of these things. And I remember afterwards, people were coming out and, Jesus, mad stuff. Anyway, we got a bit of grub. We all got onto that bus, and we went to the most random pub in Limerick that I didn't even know existed. And it was literally, and I would say that was a huge moment in Limerick's success. It was a case of that there was an awful hairy meeting where people asked a lot of questions, but we just went out, and we, you know, there was young lads being brought in, and there was this huge fun Elvin brought in that we basically went on the piss for a night, you know, and we'd mighty cracked sing songs, you name it, and it was gone to the stage at even in training sessions, whatever happens on a training pitch stays in the training pitch, whatever happens in meetings stays in meetings, and what Wheeler said there, you try and park it and then you move on and try and have a bit of fun. And I definitely think that I wasn't great at that. I was never one of, if I played a poor match or if things didn't go my way, I could never park it and just live my life normally for the next couple of days. So I'm not an expert to talk about that, but I suppose what I'm saying is that the fun element is definitely being brought back into it. And I definitely think it's the case of a lot of counties as well as just Limerick. And I think it's definitely made it easier on players, and the enjoyment is definitely back. Now, I could be criticised there of saying, well, it's easy for you to speak because the last 4 years or 5 years, you know, you've been very successful.
Very successful.
The more unsuccessful counties. But I mean, if teams like as I think Paul Brown said recently, if there was All Ireland's given out for crack, they would win them every year. You know, and I don't see any reason why other counties can't do the same.
Yeah.
I think that COVID has been, there's a huge positive out of COVID in that, you know, GA's probably stumbled across a proper split season. Like if you read the report that was done there a couple of years ago, they were talking about actually integrating club and county and being with your club for 2 weeks in the summer and then going playing your county.
Oh, that would have been tough.
I was reading, I was going, this is just wouldn't be workable, and it would mentally drain players and all sorts of stuff. So we stumbled across a kind of solution, and everyone saw that last year in terms of giving the club its proper window and giving the players, probably the inter-county players, a break from that intensity of inter-county and letting them go back with their clubs. And I think that's the positive going next year. And I think it's something that I'd say the new president's probably going to try and drive is ensuring we have that split season. The inter-county season will end in July. There will be that breather, that window for the lads to get back to their clubs, get away from the inter-county stuff. Like 2 years ago, lads, I couldn't understand. There was McKenna Cup games and O'Byrne Cup games being played like on Christmas week. Do you know what I mean? And the hurling pre-competitions, everything. And you were going, we were on a runaway train here. You know, the guys were being totally controlled by inter-county managers. They were back nearly before Christmas, right throughout the year. And they were drained by the time they come to the club. So I think COVID hopefully I hope there's a positive in there, particularly again, even at club level, going down the levels, right? 15, under 15s, under 16 development squads, minors. In the last couple of years, you know, we've seen it, even Rory, in our own club, fellas that make minor panels not playing for the club all year, missing all the league games because the development squad managers were getting a little bit carried away with themselves, were bringing them into camp nearly every weekend, and fellas were being taken out of their pool of friends, their pool of mates nearly for the whole year.
So and we know, and grand if you're Kilmacud Crokes or you're Ballantyre St. John's or you're Vincent's, not so good if you're a kind of a small to medium sized club, you know, where these guys.
Yeah, it's still not right for the individual. It's not right. And hopefully we've stumbled across, because of COVID, a proper balance where there is a proper club season and a proper inter-county season. And I think that will happen. It's definitely going
to happen. We'll get a bit of a test run on that in the next few months. Just to go back to retirement there, I think this is something that I maybe not alone in as a journalist seeing this. You often get, Shane, when a player retires, the GPA put out a statement. And God bless them, they're kind of a copy and paste job where they kind of fill out the player's name in the county, and they're almost, you know, they're almost a facsimile of the guy who retired the week before. And I always think it's not doing the guy justice. And you sometimes think, why is he making a deal out of retiring? But that's not fair. Like, he should probably come up with his own words for his retirement, or the GPA should come up with a new way of doing this. But I just think, from your point of view, like, I suppose in a way it is fun, and it is something you strive for probably since you were a child. But at the same time, it is a big commitment, and it's something that you have given your heart and soul to. So I suppose when it's over, whether by choice or in your case, you know, you're forced into it, it is something you kind of almost have to mourn, isn't it? You have to kind of go through a process and kind of, you know, grieve for your inter-county career, and hopefully kind of you can move on then afterwards.
Yeah, so the problem for me is when I had to retire, like I still couldn't go down to Pearson and join in with them and poke a few balls. Like, I'm still an ongoing injury that I'm trying to get right. So not alone did you stop from just one group, but I suppose I remember last summer, you know, going home and it'd be lovely summer's evening, and you go down and puck around and you'd be sore, and then you just get pissed off, and then you mightn't bother going down for another week or two. So it was difficult, but I suppose I'm certainly not playing the poor mode. There's a lot more people, and we're talking here about retirements and how hard it is, and it is very hard, and each individual to their own. But I suppose the way I look at it, and certainly things I've seen over recent months, and as Kieran said there, with COVID, like, there's people in worse situations than me, there's people in worse situations than anybody that retires, and that's the way I look at it now. And as I said, each individual to their own, and at that moment in time it's very difficult. Listen, it was very difficult for me, to my family, my friends. But listen, it's something that has to be done. And as I said, it's a way of life. And that's what I'm trying to be positive about now. And I'm just happy to move on. I got an operation there 7 weeks ago. So far, signs of positive, touch wood. And if that was the case, and be able to push on, and whether it's this year, next year, if I could go back and play a bit, whatever level that is, just to be around a group environment again, I think that's all.
Hey, we need a good El Farmer players group for 2 weeks in the sun golfing or something, and
I play a bit of golf. I can hit it as far as you like, but I've no idea where it goes. But I'm working on it. I joined the club there now, and I'm going to get it for lessons. And
I was about to ask how you're filling the void, but I think we've just learned how you're filling the void. A bit of golf.
I only joined a golf course there recently, so listen, all the boys play it, and it's a good way as well, so I'll get stuck into that.
It is.
So,
and Wheeler, I suppose, just finally, you in your retirement interview / first column for the Herald, you said there would be a way back for this Dublin team, which is very generous of you. There certainly was a way back. You know,
Did I actually say that?
I'm paraphrasing, but it was only a couple of weeks after the start of the earwigs, et cetera. So you did say there was a way back. So for you to retire, like, you obviously went without an All-Ireland, which will be remembered. You went with more Leinster titles than you could carry away with you. We've seen, you know, your some of your former teammates and stuff with the Dubs, maybe some of them, Bernard Brogan, kind of hung around and, like, you know, wanted to stay in there as long as he could be useful. And then others, maybe like Jack McCarthy's the obvious one, kind of step away. I don't think success makes it any easier to retire, does it? It probably makes it harder for a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm very much at peace, Mikey, with the fact I didn't win an All-Ireland medal at this point. Now, I finally got there. It's taken me a while, but I finally got there. But it's I suppose you're stepping out, as I said, you're stepping out with something that you've been usually passionate on. And I think every guy is different, and every guy will hang in there if they think there's a smell of success. And maybe that had an impact, maybe even on my decision in terms of maybe Dublin at that point were a long way off winning an All-Ireland as well, and you felt the road was longer and you just weren't fit to be on that road, you know what I mean? So it was a decision like that. But like anything, I think I would do it all again if I got the chance, 100%, because we're extremely lucky and privileged, I suppose, to have worn the county jersey and worn it for that period. And it is a roller coaster, and there's good days and there's bad days. And I'd 100% do it all again if you told me you'd get the same results, because there is nothing better, I suppose, than that atmosphere in Croke Park of 80,000 people and the place rocking, you know, and that's what, that's, you know, apart from the dressing room, that's kind of what I miss most as well. Yeah. That sense, that feeling of coming down that tunnel and the place is rocking. There's no better feeling in the world.
Would you have an ambition to manage? Would you have an ambition to manage Dublin one day, Wheeler? Would that be on your horizon in any way, shape, or form?
Not in the immediate future, Rory. I think intercounty management is a full time job, and I think it is a full time job. There's no doubt about it, and. Your lifestyle or your day job has to coincide with managing
it's a nice way of putting it, coincide.
Yeah.
How about you, Shane?
There's a reason there's so many of them are teachers, I'd imagine. Yeah. You know?
Does it appeal to you, Shane? Management coaching.
The one thing I picked up there is he said not in the immediate future, so that means yes in the distant future.
Never say never.
I'm at a different scale than Kieran, where I'm still young enough to try to get back and play. I have a good interest in coaching. I am involved in the team this year. I'm really looking forward to that. And rather than leaving myself open like Kieran did there, the answer to me is I don't know just yet.
What team are you involved with, Shane?
St. Joseph, Dor Barefield and Clare.
Okay, as a coach.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a long-term connection there, and
it's Christy O'Connor's. Christy O'Connor's.
Correct,
club,
yeah, Christy. Yeah, I know Christy club. Fairly well. Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck with that. And
thanks.
We think that went well. We'll have to discuss your fee again and whether we can get you to the Europe. But I think we'll get you back on for a happier podcast next time.
I wouldn't mind now. The Adair Manor is only 20 minutes out the road as well.
Well, you have a connection there.
Shane, would you give a portion of your fee to Rory for a haircut? No.
There we go. It took him till the end, but he got there.
Good stuff.
All right, lads. Thanks for that. As always, just a reminder of our other podcast, Soccer Rugby, and We Become Heroes, Marie Crowe's podcast, which next week should be chatting to Paul Flynn about how he went from a child in swords to a Dublin intercounty footballer. So one for the GA fans there. And Lynn Cantwell episode is the most recent one. So thank you, Shane. Thank you to Kieran. Thank you to Rory. And we'll be back with you all next week. Thanks very much.
Crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road. And that's not going to be taken away from us.
What I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What?